I'm happy to welcome to the studio Federal News Radio's Chris Dorabeck of the Daily Debrief. And this is our third Federal News Radio book club.
Absolutely. And this one's kind of it. This is the book is Grown Up Digital, and it's by Don Tapscott. And you may know Don Tapscott.
You're so excited, you're getting ahead of yourself.
I do. My brain starts going faster than than I can possibly keep up. But he wrote the book Wikonomics. Wikonomics: How Mass Collaboration Changes Everything, which is still. I was looking back at it, and I was rereading parts of it last night. It was written back in 2006.
Mm-hmm. And which in the technology world is an eon ago.
Well, technology world, but the Web 2.0 world is just, I mean, the entire planet's changed.
Mm-hmm.
But the book is still like a Bible. So that one and our last book club book, What Will Google Do, are two of the just Bibles of
their seminal books. Yeah.
They're absolutely phenomenal writing. So Don wrote this book a couple years ago called Growing Up Digital. And this is a sort of follow-on. And the reason I selected this book is, we're going through this period where there's feds may or may not be retiring, but still there are a lot of young people who are going to be coming into being feds. And frankly, they all just think a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading through this book, I think he does a really good job of, well, as Mr. Tapscott always does a really good job of pulling this all together. And he's not one of these people. And, I just get really tired of everyone saying, this new generation, it just sounds very old and cranky to
mm-hmm.
me.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, get off my lawn, people. Exactly. I think there's a lot of very interesting things, and I think that this particular generation is all of a sudden has tools to empower them, but they also look at things very differently. So we're going to talk, have him talk about that, but we also want to talk about if you're looking to hire these people and manage these people, how do you do that? Because I think it does present some unique challenges. So there's a ton of stuff that we can talk about here. If you have, as you're listening along, and you want to, if you're on Twitter and want to send us a question, twitter.com/cdorabeck.
Are you tweeting as we do this? Terrific.
I have my Twitter up, and so you can send me a note, and I'll ask those questions. And also, if you're on Facebook, we have a Facebook page. I have all of that listed on my blog, dorabeckinsider.com, right on federalnewsradio.com. And so we'll ask the questions that you want to ask.
Excellent. And with all of that being said, we welcome to the program Don Tapscott, the author of Grown Up Digital. Thank you, sir, for being on the program today.
Well, I'm happy to participate. Just FYI, my Twitter name is D Tapscott, one word.
There you go. We'll all be Twitter. We don't actually need to be on the air. We can just Twitter each other, so to speak.
Yeah, we'll tweet, have to then figure out what to put out over 1500 AM, will be a little bit tedious if we're all tweeting. I must say, Mr. Tapscott, may I call you Don?
Yes, please.
I must say that I knew that already because I'm already following you, and I encourage anybody who's interested in these subjects to do the same. Thank you for doing the show with us today to talk about this book. What was it that you saw? What cultural trends, what cues were you taking from people that you were talking to that you made it, you think, necessary to follow up to Growing Up Digital?
Okay. Well, first, just a little correction that you'll be amazed to know. Growing Up Digital was not a couple of years ago. That was 12 years ago when I wrote that book.
Wow.
And Grown Up Digital, the sequel, which just came out, was really my attempt to understand this generation as they come into the workforce, as they come into the marketplace, and as they come into society. And we studied 11,000 young people in 10 countries. It was a $4 million research project that inspired me to write the book. And I came to the conclusion that there's no more powerful force, really, to change every institution than this massive plugged-in generation of digital natives. And Exhibit A, they just elected their first president.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk a lot about how they do look at things differently, don't they?
Yeah, I started studying kids as a generation about 15 years ago, and I noticed how my own kids were effortlessly able to use all the sophisticated technology. And at first, I thought they were prodigies. But then I noticed that all their friends were like them, so that was a bad thing.
So, they're still prodigies.
Well, I still think they're prodigies, anyway. But back then, I started working with 300 kids, and I wrote Growing Up Digital. I was 97. And, this generation is different. And it's not, some people say, well, Don, youth are always different. You know, the baby boomers, I mean, they were all protesting in the 60s, and then they grew up and voted for George Bush. That's actually not true. Your political views at the age of 19, the first party you sign up with, that typically lasts throughout your life. And further, the real key point here is that this is not just a life stage difference. This is not about youth being different. This is a true generational difference. And the reason is that these kids actually have different brains than my generation. How you spend your time in adolescence, that's age 8 to 18, it's the second most important period of brain development after 0 to 2 that's not affected by all this. How you spend your time after your DNA is the main determinant in what your brain is like, the actual building of the human brain, the synaptic connections and so on. And for my generation, the boomers, we grew up watching 24 hours a week of television. And these kids watch a lot less TV, and they watch it differently. They come home and they turn on their computer, and they're in three different windows and talking to their friend on the phone or texting, and they're listening to an MP3 file, and, you know, they got three magazines open, and they're playing a video game. Oh, yeah, and they're doing their homework at the same time.
And that's one of the most interesting things, I think, about this generation, and particularly the contrast between generations, because if you look at somebody, you know, my age, looking at somebody, you know, who's in their teens, and they have all that going on, you know, I sit there and go, oh, my God, how are they doing it? And aren't they? How do they focus on anything? And I think the criticism is that they're cluttered, they're unfocused.
Well, that view is mainly wrong. There's a little tiny bit of truth to it that I'll explain. But basically, many of them can do these five things at once, so-called multitasking, because they have better active working memory and better switching abilities, because their brain is actually wired differently to be able to do this. They're actually not multitasking. They're just switching faster between things. It looks like they're doing the same, a bunch of things at once. And my view is if your kid is getting good marks, then just leave it alone.
Yeah.
You know, assuming they have balance in their life. You also want your kid to be, you know, to be doing other things.
Get outside occasionally, maybe.
Sure. Now, if your kid is spending 50 hours a week on video games or on Facebook or something, and they're not doing well, or they're not thriving, or they don't have regular sort of human relationships and so on, you got to get all over that. But the unfocused thing is kind of interesting. Like, they are graduating more from university than ever before, and there's no evidence that standards have dropped. In fact, SAT scores are up higher than they have ever been. And not only that, admission tests, all kinds of tests show that for the top third of this generation, they're the smartest ever. The middle third are doing pretty well compared to previous generations also. So you got to, how do you graduate from university if you can't focus?
Do you think
not
that's
only that? You know, have you ever seen a kid sit for 2 hours in front of a, you know, playing World of Warcraft or something?
Right.
They have unbelievable focus. And that's all about project management, strategy, execution, good human resource, talent management, and teamwork. So, I'm just not convinced. I think that we fear what we don't understand, and we end up, you know, getting these cynical views of things that are actually should not be concerning us.
Do you think that's the biggest misconception about this generation, is that they can't pay attention to something for any more than a very short period of time?
Well, there's a lot of stuff. And as you know from Grown Up Digital, they're so-called the dumbest generation. A book of that title, as the subtitle says, How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future. Don't
mm-hmm.
trust anyone under 30, says the author.
Yeah.
They're net addicted, glued to the screen, losing their social skills. They're coddled. They mooch off their parents. They don't give a damn. They steal intellectual property, like music, without due consideration of the rights of of owners of intellectual property. They're bullies. They're violent. They have the attention span of a fruit fly, quote unquote. The internet is eating the neocortex of youth today. I mean, it just goes on and on. The main problem with this whole cynical view is it's not supported by data. I did the biggest research project ever on this generation, actually probably the biggest ever conducted on any generation, and we can be enormously hopeful about these kids. Everything I just said is untrue.
And they also are very networked. They're used to, they don't just sit back and want to be fed things. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, you had maybe 3-5 TV channels. They're used to 150 TV channels and then going on YouTube where you have unlimited, number of channels. They're used to, and then going out and creating their own.
Well, that's exactly right. And again, that affects the way you process information, the way you think, and it actually affects the building of your brain. I mean, if you grow up 24 hours a week being the passive recipient of a limited TV, as you were just describing, you get a certain kind of brain. And if you grow up an equivalent amount of time, you know, reading, searching, authenticating, composing your thoughts, organizing stuff, responding, defending your point, having to remember things, even with video games, developing strategies, that creates a very different kind of brain. So, you know, I mean, this is not just about young people. This is the first time ever that we have a real generational difference. And not only that, it's the first time in human history that children are an authority about something really important. I mean, I was an authority on model trains when I was a kid. And now today, the 11-year-old at the breakfast table is an authority on this digital revolution that's changing business, commerce, learning, government, democracy, the military, every institution in society.
Don Tapscott is the author of Grown Up Digital. He is our guest on the Federal News Radio Book Club. My colleague Chris Dorbeck in studio with me. And we'll continue our discussion of this book on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment. You can find out more about the book and how to get your copy if you haven't already done so by going to the Dorbeck Insider blog on federalnewsradio.com. We'll be back in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Radio Book Club with me, my colleague Chris Dorbeck, and our author of this month's book. The book is Grown Up Digital. The author is Don Tapscott, and he joins us to talk about the book and what's in it. You know, the thing that I think is the most fascinating is what you and Chris were talking about before the break about networks. Had the former chief information officer of the Transportation Department, Dan Mintz, in here not too long ago. We started to talk about this concept. He has a couple of kids that are late teenagers. And he said what he finds the most interesting is that they rarely, kids in general in that age group, not necessarily his in particular, but they rarely start out dating anymore, just in pairs. You will have a bunch of kids that go out as groups, and then as they find the relationships that are the personal relationships that are the most comfortable for them or that make the most sense for them, that's when it starts to kind of separate out a little bit. And that really is the kind of dynamic change that you talk about throughout this book in the way that people in this age group approach not just the way that they do work, not just the way that they do education, but the way they live their entire lives.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And, you know, there's a side to it that's very sort of disturbing at first blush. We have a sec here, so I'll tell you a story. I haven't really got to tell this on air before, but it's in Grown Up Digital. I was at Florida State University, and they had brought me into the management there and all the deans and so on. A group of about 20 people were having a long lunch, and they'd asked me, what does a 21st century university look like? So I was giving my views, you know, that the model of pedagogy is wrong, the lectures inappropriate for a new generation that have grown up interacting, and that we need to reinvent the university. And I've, you know, written about this quite a bit over the years. So one of the deans turns to a youngster in the room. His name's Joe O'Shea. He's 22 years old. And he says to Joe, what do you think? And Joe's a student, just graduating. And Joe says, well, this is resonating with me. I think we do learn differently. Let me give you an example. I don't read books. And everyone in the room was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, shaken.
So he explains, and he says, I think I know what's in books, but I don't really read books. You know, my source of information is the web. If I need to know what's in a book, I go to Google Books, and I can get any chapter, and I'm good at figuring out the right chapter. And if I have to read a physical book, I don't read it like a book. I read it kind of like a website. I attack it differently. So the dean of the film school turns to the group and says, I don't know if this is really interesting and exciting or if it means the end of civilization.
Yeah.
But so I had a chartered plane for the day, so I said, come on, Joe, let me meet you. I want to get to know you. And so he was going the same direction I was. So we flew together, and I interviewed him. And I said, tell me about yourself. I said, what kind of student are you? He says, I'm good. I said, how good? He says, well, I've always had A's. I said, what else do you do? He says, well, I'm the president of the Students' Council. I have a $12 million budget, and I'm on 18 committees. I chair 6 of them. I said, gee, have you done anything else recently? And he says, yeah, well, the big thing was my girlfriend's from New Orleans, and when Katrina hit, we went down there to see what we could do, and there was no health care clinic in the devastated Ninth Ward, so I set one up. Still functioning today. It's got 9,000 patients a year. I said, what do you mean you set one up? He says, you have the internet. You can do anything you want to do. You need an air conditioner? You can get an air conditioner. I said, tell me about your parents. He sighs, and he says, they both passed away in the last year. And it's tough, you know, because I'm the eldest sibling. I got to keep the family together. I said, well, how do you do that? He says, well, they live in a different city, so I take them on World of Warcraft missions together, and it's been really great for us. I said, what are you doing next year? He says, oh, it's great. I'm going to London. I'm going to study in England. I'll have the British healthcare system. They'll be so great because we never went to the doctor as kids. We just didn't have any money. I said, cool, Joe. What are you doing? He says, I'm doing a master's of philosophy. I said, great, where's that? He says, at Oxford. Oxford and Cambridge would be the two hardest places in the world to get into to do a master's. I said, wow, that's great, Joe. Do you have, like, financial aid? He says, yeah, it's fabulous. I got a full scholarship. I said, wonderful, where did that come from? He says, it's called a Rhodes Scholarship.
So and that's the end of civilization. My God, I think we're fine.
Yeah, I think we'll be all right.
But I wanted to, and the reason why I chose Grown Up Digital is precisely for some of those reasons, because I think these, you know, and it's not only in terms of these people coming in to be potential federal employees or government employees, but it's also how agencies reach out to people, and I think there's my sense dealing, and I have a 22-year-old sister, so who is part of this generation, and she does all this stuff. And when she's looking for information, whether it be government or otherwise, she doesn't try and meander and figure out what agency it should be at. And to be, and I know I'll get a nasty note from the good folks over at USA.gov, but she doesn't go there either. She just goes to Google and searches it and assumes that if it's not on Google, then it's not worth her really knowing or, you know, that's my sense as to, you know, how they reach out for information. If it's not online and accessible and searchable, then they're just not going, it's not going to get in front of them.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. And to me, the question of this generation, its relevance, to the federal government is threefold. One is the one you were just alluding to. These kids have a different view of what a government service should be and how it ought to get created and how it ought to get accessed. And if you look into their culture, you'll understand that. Secondly, as talent, they're completely different. And the federal government, you know, has got to completely renew its talent base. How are you going to win that war? And the third one is that this is not just about government, it's about democracy itself and the relationship between the state and citizens. The old model of democracy, I call it broadcast democracy, you vote, I rule. You know, listen up to this 30-second negative advertisement where I attack my opponent on an issue that if you're young you could care less about, and go vote for me, and then I'm going to broadcast to you for 4 years, and we get to do it all over again. That's not going to work for a generation that's grown up interacting and collaborating. And the thing about Obama is he understood that. And he used the web, and he reached out to a new generation and created a social movement, and they brought him to power. And that's not just my view, it's his view. But he's also now doing the same thing to change the way that he governs as well. So the point is, and to your point, if you listen to them, you understand their culture, you'll understand how the world needs to change.
All right, we've got to take a break, Don, and continue the conversation in just a moment. This is the Federal News Radio Book Club for April, and our guest is Don Tapscott, author of Grown Up Digital. You can find out more about the book on federalnewsradio.com, and we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. We are back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Radio Book Club, and this month we're talking about the book Grown Up Digital with author Don Tapscott. And once again, thank you very much for spending so much time with us today. We're grateful for that.
It's my pleasure.
What was it, as you talked to these people, you said 11,000 people that you surveyed and that you worked with? As you went through these interviews with these folks and you learned more about them, at what point did you start to see these trends that you write about throughout the book?
Well, I've been working in this area now for about 15 years, so the trends have been shaping up over a long time. From the original book, I identified seven sort of themes of the generation. I ended up dropping one of them and adding two new ones. But it's, I'll tell you, I haven't been right about everything in my life. But,
I don't think that's true, actually.
Well, I did nail this one. And the original book actually holds up enormously well. That was, you know, the book that defined this generation and came up with a whole bunch of the terms that we all use today, like net generation, the digital divide, the generational gap, and so on. But now the eldest are 31, and these kids are coming into our institutions, and it's so sad that we have this negative view of them, because if you listen to them, you can learn so much.
You know, what I think is interesting, thinking about the fact that the leading edge is 31 years old, they're not just coming into organizations, they're at a point, at least chronologically, where they're starting to assume leadership roles and decide that moving forward, the way that they see the world is the way that their organization is going to do business.
That's right, and there's a big generational firewall that's shaping up now. We're going to see a lot of conflict in the public service.
Don, one of the things you talk about in the book is because managers are just, frankly, almost petrified about dealing with these folks.
Yeah.
And they get very scared, and it's like, oh, my goodness, how do we keep them happy? And they also worry, frankly, feds are used to sort of having this 30-year career, 35-year career, and I'm not sure that that's going to work for this generation. But you write in the book about offer up some hints about not only how to attract these people, but also how to engage them once they are in part of your organization to get the most out of the net generation. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's right. I mean, they come into the workforce, and they're all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. The top third, the ones that you're really after, they're already at university, for at least the high-end jobs. They're the smartest generation ever. They're great collaborators at their fingertips. They have more powerful tools than exist in the federal government for collaboration and high performance. So what do? We stick them in a cubicle, try and supervise them, treat them like Dilbert, and it's worse. We ban their tools.
Right.
We do things like banning Facebook. I was talking to the CIO of a state government, and where the governor had banned Facebook, and I said, why did the governor do that? And he said, well, the governor said the young people were wasting their time on the job using Facebook, to which I replied, Well, if young people are wasting their time, is that a technology problem? You fix that by taking away technology? Or is that a management problem? It has to do with job design, workflow, performance management, and supervision, and so on. I said, so what was the effect of banning Facebook? He says, well, everybody went to MySpace.
Right.
I asked another, this is in the book, actually. I asked a 27-year-old employee of a federal agency where Facebook had been banned, what was the effect of banning Facebook? He had a different answer. He said, it was the single most demoralizing thing management has ever done.
Yeah.
It said to us, we don't understand your tools. We don't understand your culture. We don't understand collaboration. We don't get your generation, and we don't trust you.
And that's, I think, what a lot of them are struggle with is that it's that trust. It's the, I mean, you know, and some of these folks have been empowered to do things well beyond what, you know, people in other generations have done. And it's, they're used to being trusted, and frankly, they're used to getting things done.
Well, that's right. And, but again, we interpret things the opposite. We draw the opposite conclusions that we should draw. So one of the eight norms that I describe from my research is speed. They want things to happen fast. So what do? We say, well, they want immediate gratification. It's another flaw.
Right.
Well, hello, my daughter is a consultant. She can check into a Marriott hotel in 30 seconds. And she wonders, why does it take 30 days to get something from the federal government that's just as complicated?
Mm-hmm.
Now, does she want immediate gratification, or in her, is it true that in her culture is the new culture of government, that things ought to happen faster? There ought to be better performance. There ought to be better customer centricity and focus, and so on.
And one of my frustrations often is that, you know, as long as I've been covering this world, the government world, we've been talking about challenges with sharing information, with collaborating, with working across traditional stovepipes is what we call them.
Right.
And there's all these tools and all these people who that's how they work. They don't, they don't recognize, and instead of sort of embracing them and saying, how can we take that and apply it to our organizations and maybe do our jobs better, my sense is that people get afraid of it.
You know, that's so true. What you just said actually presents a research dilemma. So what we did is we came up with all these impediments to sharing knowledge, okay? And, you know, across silos and so on. And these impediments were given to us by adults. And then we went to the young people and we said, how would you overcome these impediments? And it was a real problem because they couldn't answer the question because they didn't understand why these were impediments. So, you know,
wow.
Somebody
yeah.
says, well, you can't share knowledge with someone you've never met. To which a 14-year-old replies, well, if you can fall in love with someone you've never met, surely you could share knowledge. Now, there's a side to that that's a little, you know,
right.
troublesome,
yeah.
but, you know, and so another kid says, I'm sorry, I just can't answer the question. Like, isn't that what the web is all about, sharing knowledge?
Isn't that what it's for?
Yeah. Another kid says, what good is knowledge if you don't share it? I can't answer these questions.
That's fascinating.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about the information sharing aspect, but I know we have to take a break,
yeah.
and so we'll do that when we come back.
Don Tapscott's our guest. He's the author of Grown Up Digital and the Federal News Radio Book Club on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back with more in-depth in just a moment. We're back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and in studio I have with me my colleague Chris Dorobek, who is really, I have to say, an evangelist for this book, Grown Up Digital, by Don Tapscott.
And I was writing my blog post about the book last night, I was sort of pondering the connection. Sorry, go ahead, and then I'll jump.
I was just going to introduce our guest for the hour, who is the author of the book, Don Tapscott, and thanks again for being on the program. But really, Don, Chris has been going around the station and on his blog, talking to colleagues and tweeting for a long time about this book. And when I got a copy of it, I understand why, because we've talked about some of the perceptions that people have of the digital generation. And whether you like those perceptions or not, we know now that a lot of them are not true. But regardless of whether you like the fact that this generation is using these tools and receiving information the way they're doing it, whether you think it's a good idea or a bad, they're doing it anyway. So if you're a realist, I think, understanding the way that they think and the way that they interact with each other and with the people who are not of their generation is really vitally important.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another side to that sometimes they do things, say things, behave in certain ways. There are aspects of their culture that we look at, and it just looks weird. And when you get under the covers, though, if you're really determined to do this, you'll find something interesting. I'll give you an example. This young woman was constantly, as a new employee of mine, constantly coming to me saying, you know, how did I do? How was that presentation? How was this? How was that? And it seemed to be reflective of this need that a lot of them have for feedback. And at first I thought, you know, is this just like a generation of narcissists? And then the closer I got to it, I realized they actually are trying to get better. And our performance review systems in government are like once a year. They want feedback multiple times a day. So is this a bad thing? Well, I found this little software program. It's called Ripple, RYPPLE, that enables you to get feedback multiple times a day. So right now, there are people at my company who are probably listening to this interview, and as soon as this interview is over, I'll go on to Ripple, and I've solicited feedback anonymously from a dozen of them, and they're going to say, yeah, Don, you know, it was a good interview. That point was really good. You went too long about that. I'm going to actually get feedback that will help me
interview. I love that idea.
So this is, again, it sounds weird, but if you listen, this is changing performance management from a batch to a real-time thing.
Yeah.
And it's to my point, in their culture is the new culture of work, if you'll just listen to them. And as you know, throughout the book are countless examples of how we ought to do things differently.
I actually got a question on from Twitter from Mary Davey, who is over at GSA, and she was at listening to Anthony Williams, your co-author on Wikonomics, who was in town last night and talking, and he was talking about mass collaboration, changing healthcare and social services and nonprofits. And her question is, are these changes in part an impact of this digital generation, of all these young people and having different expectations of all these organizations?
Well, I think that's absolutely true, that they come into the workforce and they are different. They have a different culture and they're looking for different things. So, you know, a big implication from that. I mean, you need to design work according to these eight norms. I think that we need to rethink authority. You know, a youngster comes to work for the federal government. It's like, hi, I'm your boss. So welcome to traditional government bureaucracy, Inc. A boss is someone who's an authority on everything in this branch or whatever. Well, just a sec. The young person is thinking, you know, I'm used to being an authority on something really important since I was 11 years old. I have a different view of authority. Why don't we work together in collaborative teams where we each have our own area of authority? I think that, that rather than banning Facebook and other social networks, I mean, these are becoming the new operating system of government. And, I was in the White House a couple of days ago, and I can't say who I was talking to or what.
Well, sure you can.
Not if he wants to go back.
Not if I want to go back. But I will say this. There's a broad appreciation in this administration that these new tools are not just about getting elected or changing the way you interact with citizens. They're going to be really critical to the way the public sector operates. Like, the social network, I think, is the new operating system for business. And you may have heard, the caller may have heard Anthony Williams talking about that last night. We've done a lot of work in this area. We have a new powerful platform that could enable people to come together in the federal government, to find each other, to collaborate, to share knowledge, to do things like digital brainstorms, idea generation, who could, you know, where work could be more fun and more enjoyable, breaking down these silos and so on. These ideas have been around for a long time, but to your point, they were ideas in waiting.
Hey, Don, we've got to squeeze in one more break. Let's stay right there if we can. Chris wants to make a point when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back in just a moment. We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking to Don Tapscott, the author of Grown Up Digital, the selection this month in the Federal News Radio Book Club. And, Don, one of the problems of doing this is that we only have an hour to talk to you, and it's just flown by, and we're grateful for the amount of time that you've spent with us talking about the book. You were in the middle of making a point when we had to go to that last break, and we're almost out of time, but I wanted to give you a chance to wrap that up.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the point.
I don't remember either. I wanted to just quickly mention there are a couple of things that I think that this book just does such a phenomenal job at. And I think people get so read the book and you will come away from you will have, I think, an appreciation of this generation. And not look at them as if they're some boogie people out to get you. But when I was speaking to a bunch of folks at HHS a couple months ago, and they were talking about, and I said, you know, put your information out there, post it, and allow people to comment on it. And they said, well, what if we get 10,000 comments? And I said, well, first off, isn't that what you want? Second off, that's when you can tap into these folks because, as Don and the book so clearly says, that's what these folks do. They're used to dealing and sorting through and figuring out ways to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are real opportunities to tap into that.
Well, totally. And again, it's back to changing the way you run a government, but also the way democracy works. I mean, imagine this. The president on Monday says we're going to hold a 3-day conversation in America where everyone can participate. I'm calling it a digital brainstorm. And the topic I've chosen is, you know, whatever, pick your topic. Maybe he would choose how to improve the economy or climate change, how to, you know, fight global warming or improving America's status in the world or whatever. And then every day he would participate in that conversation, read all the best comments. The best ideas come to the fore because people can rate them, or the comments that most people have read. It's like YouTube, or the comments that there are most comments on. This is not about direct democracy. This is not, you know, Ross Perot in the electronic town hall. You get to vote every night on the evening news. If that's what he was saying, that's a really bad idea.
Right.
Democracy is a lot more than majority rule on a nightly basis. But it's about engaging citizens. There would be initiatives that get catalyzed all across the country. People would learn from each other. Politicians would come up with good ideas. People would become less cynical and more involved in the body of politics. We might even influence each other to change some of our points of view. And when citizens get engaged in the right context, good things can happen.
Don, that's a really exciting prospect, and the book is full of exciting prospects, and unfortunately we're running out of time to talk about them, but thank you so much for spending so much time with us. We love having people like you on the show, and we would love to have you come back and talk about these ideas some more.
Well, thanks so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.